Mr. Media, I'll talk to best-selling novelist Jackie Collins. Her new novel, the latest installment in the Lucky Santangelo Chronicles, is Goddess of Vengeance. Stick around. Every time Miss Collins appears on the show, my mother grudgingly approves of my career choice a little bit more. Note to self, wonder if we could do this every week. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 900 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of chick-lit novelists who aren't talented enough to dust Jackie Collins' stack of writing pads in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. The first time Jackie Collins was a guest on Mr. Media, I have to admit, I was a little nervous. This is a novelist who has sold about 4 billion copies of her books and has been producing quality popular work since I was in short pants. Would she hang up the minute the first dumbass remark came out of my mouth? And when I inevitably stumbled over the title of her then-current book, Poor Little Bitch Girl, would she put me in my place with a withering glance so toxic I could feel it through the phone line? Nah, she was a doll. I remember finishing that interview and feeling like that was a keeper. Miss Collins was charming, effervescent, and, for struggling and successful writers alike to hear, quite the inspiration. Now, I'm quite eager to spend the next 30 minutes with her to hear about her new book, Goddess of Vengeance, which continues the adventures of Lucky and her supporting cast. I'm also hopeful we'll hear more about her craft and how the autobiography is coming. I might even ask what her actor sister Joan is up to this time. Or, I might not. Jackie Collins, welcome back to Mr. Media.
I am delighted to be here. First of all, you have to call me Jackie.
Okay.
Enough of the Miss Collins.
Hey, Jackie it is. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about the latest book in Lucky. Lucky's obviously been very good to you for many years, and I kind of wondered, to what degree do her actions, her philosophy, and her life capture elements of Jackie Collins?
Well, I think she's such an interesting woman to write, and she's certainly the woman I would like to be in another life. I mean, she does everything, you know. She does all the things that women really want to do and never quite have the courage to do. She gets away with it, and that's why women love her. I think I've told you this before, but she's kind of like a James Bond for women. She's very inspirational, and women love that. They love a strong heroine, and men love it, too, because they find her incredibly sexy.
Is it particularly fun to be able to write in this way and say the things that maybe even you wouldn't say in regular conversation?
Oh, it's so good, because I create characters, and as I told you, I write in longhand. So the characters, in a way, channel themselves through my pen. And people say to me, well, why don't you write on a computer? And I go, I do everything else on a computer. I do research, I do iTunes, iPhotos, everything. I'm on the computer all the time. But when it comes to writing, I have to have that pen, because somehow or other, the character channels itself through me. And in Goddess of Vengeance, I've written the worst villain I have ever written, Armand Jordan, who's this man from a fictitious country in the Middle East. And I don't know, you know, I look back at it now, and I pick up the book, and I'll read a little bit, and I'll go, where the hell did he come from? Because I can't believe that I wrote the appalling things that he does. And he does do appalling things, especially with women.
I noticed that. I wanted to ask you about that. I was thinking, frankly, that if John Jakes years ago hadn't written a book titled The Bastard, that would work very well for him.
Yes, absolutely.
Even though technically he's not a bastard, but...
No, I mean, he's born in this fictitious country that I created. And I'll tell you why I did this, because I was reading the New York Times one day, and I read this story about a woman in Saudi Arabia who was about to be buried up to her neck and stoned to death. And I thought, this cannot be happening in this day and age. Mm. And I decided I would create this fictitious country so that nobody would get mad at me, and I would have a king and princes and their own rules and everything. But I wanted to show how some men in the Middle East have absolutely no respect for women. I mean, the fact that they are still wearing burqas in this day and age and being completely covered and all you can see is their eyes, it's not for religious reasons. It's because men want to keep women in their place.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to show that this was a man that had no respect for women, that liked to humiliate women. And he was born a prince, but he came to America when he was 13 with his showgirl mother and became one of the biggest property tycoons in America, and then goes to Las Vegas and decides he wants to buy Lucky Santangelo's fantastic Vegas complex, the Keys. But of course, he has no idea who he's coming up against. He is coming up against Lucky Santangelo. So,
I got a kick, and I wish I had bookmarked that particular page. The country that you created, of course, is Akramshar, or pronounced
Akramshar.
And you describe it, and I don't have the exact line. Maybe you'll remember it. You describe it as being between here and there, essentially. It's between this country and that country.
Yes, yes. It's between Saudi Arabia and something else, which I can't quite remember right now. But it's you know, that was interesting to do because there's a lot of little kind of principalities in the Middle East, mm-hmm. where they have their own kings and their own princes, and because there's so much money there, you know, with the oil and everything. So I figured it was a good idea to create this fictitious country where I could make up its own rules. And the king, you know, the king lets this boy go to America, even though he's prince, but he has like, you know, 8 and 9 brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, you have to come back here on my birthday every year. And so that's how this kind of attitude towards women gets indoctrined in him. He just, you know, has this hatred of women.
Well,
it's not really so much hatred as a dismissive thing, like women are nothing, they're chattels.
Oh, I don't know. I might go with hatred there. I mean, when he, in the story, when he finally meets Lucky, now you've been building up to the point where he meets Lucky for like 200-something pages.
Yeah, exactly, and she's striding through the book.
Right, and you're painting the picture, you're setting the scene with him of all these horrible things he does to women and he pays for to do to women, and it's building up to it. And there's still that part of you that thinks, okay, when he actually meets Lucky, he can't possibly behave this way. He'll probably behave more like he does with his mother, Peggy. But then he gets in the room with Peggy, and oh my God, I thought, wow, what a payoff.
I know. I loved writing that scene. That was so much fun to write. You know, as a writer, people say to me, do you ever get writer's block? And I go, no, I never get writer's block, but sometimes I get getting to the desk block. But once I'm at the desk, it's all bets are off. I mean, I could sit there for hours and hours and hours just writing these characters because they almost write themselves, you know. I'm writing a new book now called The Power Trip, and I have a whole slew of characters in this book. And it's so interesting for me to create these new characters because I used to read Dickens when I was a kid. And what I loved about Dickens' work was the fact that he did have so many different characters, but yet you could visualize them all, you could see them all, you could picture them all.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I want to bring to my readers. I want to bring strong women, fabulous stories, and I want to bring visual images. Because in this day of television and movies and the internet and everything, there's so much entertainment out there, but there actually is nothing like reading a book, uh-huh. because your own imagination comes into play.
Well, let's talk about visual for a minute. Let's stick with Armand for a second, because the scenes that you set with him are frighteningly visual. I mean,
they are. There's one scene where he's with these two ladies of the night, who I named Seductive Sin and Luscious, which I thought were great names. And, you know, there's mounds of cocaine on the table. He's doing unspeakable things to them. And my assistant, who puts all my books on the computer for me, after I've handwritten it, she puts it on the computer, came into the room and she said, oh, my God, she said, are you channeling Charlie Sheen?
Wow.
And I said, no, I'm not. This is a completely original character. But, oh, my God, writing him was quite something.
Well, and, I mean, the specificity of one of the scenes with as you described, I think, the old-fashioned Coke bottle. And I thought, okay, who can't visualize that? And what? Oh, my God.
Well, there you go. You see, I'm not that explicit,
no.
But I'm explicit enough that you know exactly what he's going to do with it.
Well, and so let me ask you about that. I mean, what, over the course of, I think, 28, at least 28 books.
Yeah, 28. This
28, right?
28 books.
So
yeah.
What taboos have you tossed aside over the years since you started writing these books? I mean, what could you write in a book today or write about today that maybe wouldn't have been acceptable, say, in, I don't know, The Stud or The Bitch or something like that?
Well, you know, it's so interesting you should say that, because I just rewrote The Bitch, because I'm going to put it out myself on ebooks.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, I'll just skim through it. I'm sure it's fine. And as I'm skimming through it, I'm changing this and I'm changing that, so it's going to be absolutely the revised edition. And yet, it's very relevant. It's very today. And even though I wrote it, I think, in the 80s, you know, I think that I wouldn't change anything. I think that you can, yeah, sure, sexually, you can say much more today than you could have done. I mean, I was thinking this morning that on television now, you know, people say penis and vagina and balls, and they never were allowed to say that. And now they're on, like, Modern Family. And you're like, wow, this is 8:30 at night. So I've always said the words that I want to say. I only took them out in my first book, The World is Full of Married Men, because my publisher said to me, and it was my first book, so I was kind of naive, he said, you have to take out the four-letter words, otherwise you will be banned in Australia. And, of course, I took out the four-letter words, and I was banned in Australia. So I think when I revise that book, I might put the four-letter words back in, because that's the way, let's face it, that's the way people speak. I mean, when people go, oh, you know, it's so vulgar, and it's not. It's the way people speak. And I think that's one of the appeals of my books, is the fact that I did, you know, I was thrown out of school when I was 15, but I managed to capture the voice of people, of the way we speak, the way we are. That my books are not literary. They are storytelling. And it's storytelling that, you know, people can understand, because the dialogue is very accurate. I mean, you know, if I'm in a car and somebody cuts me off, I'm not going to say, oh, dear me.
What would you say, Jackie?
Oh, you don't want to know.
I can handle it.
But can your listeners? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I always say to people, if you get easily shocked, don't read one of my books. But if you like a roaringly good story and bizarre characters and fun things and reality, because I write all different sizes, all different ages, all different sexual orientation, and all different colors. My characters are what I see when I go out into the world.
Mm-hmm. What would a Jackie Collins novel without sex be no novel at all?
Absolutely not. I mean, sex comes into my novels because I'm writing about normal people, and normal people have sex lives.
Mm-hmm.
If I was writing about a nun or a priest who didn't have a sex life, I could still write that story, and I could make it a hell of a story. But sex, you know, people have said to me, oh, I've written a book, and, you know, and my editor said, oh, there's no sex in it. So I put, you know, sex on page 10 and page 20, and just like you. And I go, no, that's not the way I do it. I mean, my characters tell me when they're going to have sex. I don't plan, oh, today I'm going to write this incredible sex scene. No, thank you. You know, Lucky is waiting for her husband to come home in Goddess of Vengeance. And I decided that, you know, they'd been married for a long while, and I write great marriage sex. Why not? I'm fed up with hearing comedians put down, you know, people when they're married. Oh, yes, that's the end of your sex life. So, and I tried to be a little inventive. You know, Lenny is into tantric sex, and Lucky, of course, she's very special in the bedroom. And then with Denver and Bobby, I wanted to write something that was a little different because it had a fight. So we all love makeup sex. So they had makeup sex, except it was in the elevator at a big Vegas hotel. And the doors open at one point, and, you know, tourists are standing there aghast. But old Bobby does, he just shuts the door, closes the elevator door. So, you know, writing sex has to be fun. And with Armand, it wasn't fun because he was so into humiliating women. But, you know, the other characters, they're normal people, so they have normal sex lives.
You mentioned Bobby and Denver, and I wanted to ask you about them. In Poor Little Bitch Girl, Lucky kind of steps away, and the focus is on these other characters, such as Bobby and Denver and Annabelle.
Yes.
Did anyone kind of rise to your attention in writing Goddess of Vengeance that might be apt for a future spinoff?
Well, I love Max, who is Lucky's 17-year-old daughter who mm-hmm. becomes 18 in the book. I mean, she's obviously a little Lucky, and she's going to go places in future novels because Lucky is always going to be there. And, you know, my fans won't let me kill off Lenny or Gino. Gino is 90-something now, and they go, no, you cannot kill him. You cannot kill him. And, of course, they want Lenny and Lucky to be together forever. I would like to give her some freedom. And I did in one of the books when, you know, I kind of got this situation where Lucky thought that Lenny was dead, and then she had a one-night stand with Alex, who keeps on reappearing in book after book. But I think that, you know, the future is definitely going to be Bobby Santangelo Stanilopoulos, who is her gorgeous son. Every woman I bump into now goes, oh, I've got to have a Bobby in my life. He's so gorgeous. Where can I find him? And I go, he's in my head. So they love that character. So Bobby in Denver will definitely be coming back. And Max. And, of course, Lucky will always be in the background somewhere because she's the matriarch of the family now. I'm also thinking, and I don't think I told you this when we were talking last time, mm-hmm. but I'm also thinking of writing a young adult novel of Lucky when she was 16.
Oh.
Because I created her in the book Chances. And it was so interesting. When she was 16, she was in a boarding school in Switzerland, and she ran away from the boarding school to the south of France where she lived in this villa. And then Gino finally, you know, traces her, and he marries her off to a senator's son when she's 16. So I thought, that's just a couple of chapters in that book. I would love to explore who she was, you know. It was probably the 80s, and she would be so interesting.
Well, plus it'd be a great marketing decision, because if you can lure in a new generation of readers to Lucky through that, they'll come back and they'll search out the other Lucky books.
Well, you know what's so interesting about that? I'm on Twitter. I'm Jackie J. Collins on Twitter. And then I have an extensive Facebook fan page. And I also have a website, JackieCollins.com. But on Twitter, I get all these kids sending me messages, and they're going, hey, I'm 15. I just read Goddess of Vengeance. I loved it. I'm going to go back and read all your books. I didn't know a reading could be so much fun. So I am having this lovely, great teenage audience now, too, which is one of the reasons why I thought about doing a young adult book, because young adult books can be kind of, not raunchy, but they can be kind of out there now because, you know, boundaries are down.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch The Real World on television, or if you watch Jersey Shore, I mean, anything goes.
Or even Modern Family. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we have progressed a great deal, but I was always ahead of the pack, so I never had to, you know, amp the sexual content of my books up because it was always there.
Well, in the time we have left, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about craft. And one of the things before we actually started recording, you were telling me, I was asking if you use a typewriter or computer, and you say you do everything, you know, for the books. By hand.
Yeah.
Tell everybody again how many pages this book was to handwrite.
Goddess of Vengeance was 2,000 handwritten pages, and that at the end of a book I have my handwritten pages leather bound, and that's the favorite thing. When I get that back, I love it so much because what you see is what you get. I mean, I have an editor, but you know we usually discuss a few things before I start writing the book, and then he leaves me totally alone. And at the end of the book, he might make a couple of little comments. But what you see is what you get. The handwriting is all there. You can see that nothing is basically changed. And I love doing it that way. I mean, the yellow legal pad, I have to have a fresh felt pen. And I have drawers of felt pens. And I bought all these felt pens in England and bought them back. And I found the box of them the other day. And, of course, it all dried up. That was fun.
Wow. And what color pen? I guess I might as well ask.
Actually black or blue,
okay.
Or sometimes I buy those color packs, but I love felt pens. Those are the only ones I can really write with, felt tip, yeah.
That's so funny. That's exactly what I use, and I get a lot.
Really?
I get a lot of grief. Now, these are just paper mates, but yeah, they're blue and black.
Yeah, the paper mates are fabulous.
Yeah.
I should be their spokesperson.
I think we may have just opened the door.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I get a lot of grief for it, but I love them. I mean, that's all I'll use when I'm taking notes or writing
fantastic.
A story. So, yeah.
I mean, biros, you can't really, roller tops, you can't really control them.
Mm-hmm.
And a pen that I've just recently gotten for is a Sharpie pen. That's not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried the Sharpie pen?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times they're a little too thick, but I know they make a thinner one.
Yeah, they make a thin one, and that's good for when I'm doing my corrections. I sometimes use that.
But it's
a ritual for me, you know. That's the way I've done it for 28 books, and I'm not about to change now.
The only problem with the Sharpie is that those tend to be permanent ink. If you just happen to move that the wrong way on your hand, you're going to wear that ink for a few days.
I think they do a new one now that is not permanent.
Really?
You have to go to Target.
Ah, Tarjay.
Well, they have walls of pens. I love Tarjay. Yes, yeah. It's a fun place to hang out. You know, it's so funny because my friends will imagine that I'm going to hang out at, you know, Neiman Marcus and Saks and all the big stores. But if you say to me, oh, you can stay at Staples and Tarjay, I'm a happy person.
Well, I can just see the endorsement opportunities after this phone call. So,
yes.
So let me ask you this. So you handwrite the story in black or blue. Do you correct as you go, or do you just get it
yes,
all out?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I cross out and all kinds of things. Sometimes I post on my Twitter. I will post a page that I've just written, and my fans love that because, you know, it's got the cross outs and the different color pens sometimes, and they really enjoy seeing that. In fact, when we get off the phone today, I'm going to do that.
Hmm.
Yes.
Very nice.
Post a page, yes.
And how long... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
How long did it take you from start to finish to write 2,000 handwritten pages?
It takes me about 9 months. But then during that 9 months, I might have to take a few weeks off to do promotion. For instance, Goddess of Vengeance came out in England way before America, mm-hmm. and I had to go over to London and promote it, and it was number one there, so it was well worthwhile doing so. But then we came back, and I got into writing the new book, and then I had to pause that recently to do the promo for Goddess of Vengeance in America. But I had fun doing it. I mean, it's nice because I can divide my life up into separate kind of, you know, sections where I will be on Craig Ferguson one night or Tavis Smiley or The View or The Talk or whatever. And it kind of makes a nice break. Or I can produce one of my movies, which I love doing. And last year I produced a movie, actually it only came out in England, called Paris Connections. It was financed by one of the biggest supermarkets in England, which was kind of crazy. It was a direct-to-DVD movie, which was really fun. So that's fun to take a break and do those kind of things. And I've written a play, which is going to be on sometime next year, called Hollywood Lies.
Yeah, that should be good.
Yeah, it should be fun. I wanted to travel across America. That would be fun.
That would be good. Now, on Ferguson, I saw that clip. On Ferguson, you were talking about writing your autobiography. And
yes.
That you're going to actually make connections between real people and characters in the book. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, I think I might do that because I remember when I first came to Hollywood, when I was like this crazy, wild teenager who'd been thrown out of school, I actually lived in this apartment building. It was very similar to Melrose Place. And, you know, the people in the next door apartments, they were, you know, pumping gas and parking cars like the Dionne Warwick song and all trying to be actors or writers. And those people I very much wrote about when I wrote the original Hollywood Wives.
Well,
Angel and Buddy lived next door to me. Angel, the beautiful blonde, you know, from the Midwest, and Buddy, the stud guy. So they were definitely based on those characters. So maybe I will reveal some of the real names. Yeah.
Nice.
Every guy in Hollywood thinks he was the hero of the stud.
I bet he does.
Yes.
Does it have to be someone who's Hollywood? Because I always thought it would. Never mind. So,
yes.
Yes. So we've...
No, not necessarily, yes.
Okay. So somehow I've brought the conversation around to Hollywood. So let me ask you two questions, and then we'll kind of wrap up. First of all, how is your sister? What is she up to these days?
She is great. She is in the south of France enjoying a lovely long vacation, and then she's going to Australia to do her one-woman show.
Oh, nice. Do you think while she's in the south of France, she'll be visiting any Tarjay stores?
I doubt it. She's not a Tarjay girl. I am.
And you know, it hadn't occurred to me to ask you this until we were just talking about who's who in those, particularly in those early books. Have you ever written a character that had it as its basis your own sister?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, when I wrote The Stud, followed by The Bitch, it was very much based, the character of Fontaine Callard was very much based on her and a friend of hers, a very close friend of hers. So Aaron Spelling saw the movie of The Stud, which we produced with our husbands, and fell in love with the character, and the character which he took out of the film and put into Dynasty was my character. That Fontaine Callard was Alexis Carrington Colby. So I feel that after she looked after me when I was a school dropout, I paid her back by giving her a real fantastic opportunity to, you know, rule American television.
What a nice sister you are.
Well, she's a nice sister, too. We get along really well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, on the autobiography, when do you think you'll get that done?
Well, I'm kind of working on it as I work on the new book, so I'll suddenly write like a chapter and then put that away and then go back to the book I'm writing and then do another chapter, because I think you as you write an autobiography, you suddenly get all these memories. And I want it to be a fun book, but I also want it to be, kind of a history of, as I wrote each of my books, what I was doing and how I was doing it kind mm-hmm. of deal. So I think it'll be fun because it'll be insightful, because I've always kept my private life quite private. And I think that people will be probably interested, because I am inspirational to women as far as having had this incredible career, which I, actually followed my dream to create.
Well, folks, you can find Jackie Collins' latest novel of sex, debauchery, and naked ambition, Goddess of Vengeance, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. I know you've got the website, JackieCollins.com. You're on Twitter. You're on Facebook. You're in Target. Target.
I'm shopping in Target. Yes.
Office Depot. We use Papermate and Sharpie pens. Have I missed anything before time?
I don't think you have. You've done a fabulous job today. It was so fun talking to you again. It always is.
Jackie, it was just delightful to have you. I really enjoyed the book, and look forward to having you come back when The Power Trip comes out.
Okay, and give my love to your mom.
I will. Thank you very much. You take
care. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. For more original interviews, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. If you've enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Another good idea, download our new free Mr. Media mobile app in the Android market. And you can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many parts of the Internet. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. We're also supported by thepartyauthority.us. Call DJ Ira for all your party entertainment needs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS or visit their website, thepartyauthority.us. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media Radio, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line at 1-727-498-4711. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show. And unless you live next door to Mr. Media, there may be a toll charge. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube and Vimeo video channels. Thanks so much for joining us today. I always appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Hello, this is novelist Michael Connelly, and you're listening to Mr. Media.
Hey, folks. You can hear Mr. Media while on the go now with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Whether you use an iPhone, iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry Curve, or Palm Pre. And when you download Stitcher to hear Mr. Media today, you have a chance to win some real money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in your smartphone's app store. Download it. It's free. Takes seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Mr. Media, that's MR Media, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of Mr. Media will be waiting for you in Stitcher's favorites right on your phone. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. Some of my favorites include WTF with Marc Maron, Plus One Per Diem with Kevin Smith, and The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. It's all free and all instant to you on Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to win the money. Enter promo code Mr. Media, MR Media, when you register. And thanks for listening.
Hi, this is George Kennedy. I have a book out. It's called Trust Me. You know what the book is about? The book is about me looking you straight in the eye and telling you the truth. about whatever. I tried really hard to tell the truth about everything that came across my way. I hope you get a chance to look at it. Thank you.